back. Hi, Yeti.
How are you? Hope you're fine. This is the Shy Yeti Show.
Okay, away you go.
Why have I got horns?
Oh, no.
Oh, it's the Shy Life Podcast.
Oh, there's going to be some drama ahead.
All I wanted was a pie,
and then I hatched out of an egg.
Okay, bring the mic over. He's ready to record.
Is it metaphorical? Is it deep? Is it deep?
Good boy. He's not all that shy, is right.
Blimey, Governor. It's the Shy Life Podcast.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello, boy.
Quack, quack, quack.
I don't know how he does it.
Excellent.
Bonjour et bienvenue au podcast The Shy Life.
Hello. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Shy Life Podcast with me, Paul the Shy Yeti. How are you doing? I'm alright. So, what's this episode going to be about? Well, we're going to be talking about books and things this episode. If you remember, at the start of 2023... we did an episode all about all the books that I'd read in 2022. We did that episode with Toppy. But this time, well, a year on, we're going to be talking about all the books that I read in 2023. Toppy's not here this time, but we've got another special guest. Yeah, so if we run the theme music, we can get straight on. So let's do that now. Run that theme music.
Darling, it's the Shy Life Podcast.
Keep it rolling, keep it rolling.
Yeah, but it's a positive thing for
me.
The Shy Life.
I'll go anyway for a potato.
Delicious.
Hello, Captains. How are you?
Go Shy Yeti.
Oh, I hope he hasn't found out my secret. Do you think he has?
I love the Yeti test. It's my favourite thing.
If you thought that was bad, just listen to this.
Yeah, I'm strangely drawn to Yeti Uncle John's ankles as well.
I could eat more body weight in crisps.
Has anyone seen my hot sausage?
It's all gooey and meaty and yum, 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 yum.
I don't think I'm ready to speak about it.
Here comes the grizzly.
Hi there.
It's the Shy Life Podcast.
I can't wait for it to begin.
I like that. Yeah.
Marvellous. Marvellous.
Oh dear, I can't believe that old bag is still around.
So who's our special guest? Well, it's Mama Yeti. It's my mum. And, she's going to be popping in and out of this episode. I read 39 books, I think it was, in 2023, which was a slight drop on the previous year. Although it would be fair to say that some of the books that I completed in 2023 were ones that I'd started in 2022. You do get that crossover. The same would have been the case the previous year. But anyway, 39 books wasn't a bad amount. I don't want to talk to my mum about all of them, because it's quite a lot to discuss. I also wanted to talk to her about her continuing role as curator of the Telephone Box bookshop, and maybe about some of the books that she's been reading. So we've got all that to fit in. So one or two of the books we will just skip over. So yes, we'll start discussing the books, but if they're ones I discuss with my mum, then we'll cut to those recordings. So let's get started. Was called When You Call My Name by Tucker Shaw. I don't think I came across this book because at the end of 2022 I'd read My Policeman, the book My Policeman, and I'd seen the movie, and I was sort of looking for similar LGBT sort of romances, maybe, or at least themed books, and that's one that was relatively recently written that I came across, and I enjoyed it. It was kind of sad. It was set in the 80s, I think it was the late 80s, both characters were sort of quite young, and a lot of the time the two main characters didn't actually meet, but the chapters sort of alternated between their stories. One guy was studying and had moved away from home, and the other was was sort of working in the fashion industry, but only very early days of it. And they sort of kept crossing over, and you sort of experienced their stories. And it was one of those books that you kind of want to read the next chapter. And the chapters weren't that long, which is really my idea of a perfect book. I love short chapters that allow you to sort of, I'll just read a couple more. A good start to the year. Hello, Mum. Good to have you back on the show.
Hello, Paul.
I'm looking at my phone because I need to get the book titles up so I can tell you about them, because I can't remember. You're lucky you're not going to get all 39. So some of them aren't of interest. They are of interest because the listeners are going to hear about them. But you'll be here all day. You've got other things to do. But before we do that, whilst I'm sorting this, how is the bookshop? Or not the book? It's not really a bookshop. The phone box depository.
The bring and take. It has its quiet periods, and as the road's been flooded, there's not been a lot going in or out. We've probably, after 6 weeks, say, start getting the gifts from Christmas that have been read and aren't required to be kept, so we probably have a bigger influx then. The readers aren't bringing so many non-fiction. I'm finding it hard to get many non-fiction at the moment, except for coffee table books, which are a nuisance as they take up a lot of space, which is deadly boring. To your listeners, I mean, not to...
Maybe things will improve as the weather gets better. Didn't you say that you saw someone trying to put a bag of books in there, had to hop over a puddle to even get to the phone box?
Yes. I didn't go for a couple of days because it was quite a... In fact, you needed to be relatively tall to even manage to clear the puddle. It was getting towards halfway the middle of the road. So the one problem I do find is... as the children get older, or the toddlers get older, they start discarding teddy bears, and some teddy bears I don't want them to go. Rather nice one now that if somebody doesn't take it, it will come across and live with us.
I know there's one listener who'll be very concerned about the future of that teddy bear. So it needs to go to a good home, or it needs to stay here. Isn't that right, Mateus? I might ask you a bit about what you've been reading recently, but we'll look at some of my books first that I read last year. First one I was going to talk to you about, it's not the greatest start for our conversation, because I'm not sure how... It was a book called The Pools by Bethan Roberts. So I'd read a previous book by her, which I really enjoyed, and I often do that. I start, I read one book and I think... I'll see what else they've done and get maybe one or two, especially with digital, and they're only £2 or £3. The Pools was sort of about a community where I feel like you, because now we're talking about almost a year ago since I read it, but I feel like we knew that it was leading up to something. The Pools were, I think they were like, I don't quite know, well, other than that they were pools, but I think there was like those sort of
water
cooling.
Water or people?
Sorry?
Water, pools, or people? People called pool.
No, pools. Pools. P-O-O-L-S.
Still could be people called pools. I know you can edit this out.
I told you now. Those sort of the power stations, don't they have like cooling towers that they have sort of... I get the feeling...
Well, nuclear power. Yeah. They have to keep the radioactive whatnots... I think they are submerged in.
Yeah, but these sort seem to be pool. It was a little bit difficult to work out what sort of pool they were talking about, but there was definitely some sort of power station in the area, but these were pools that people could walk their dog around and stuff.
Well, it could have been leakages from the power station getting into the water, because they're worried about that at the moment up in Cumbria a bit.
I'm not totally sure, but I know they were kind of like, you wouldn't go swimming in them sort of thing.
Hmm.
But it was sort of leading up to various characters, in only two or three characters, and you knew it was sort of building up towards, like, what one girl and these boys being interested in her, but one of them was sort of somebody you didn't want to hang around with, but that made him even more appealing, and then another character being jealous of that boy, and I mean, they weren't really boys, they're more like teen, like 20, you know, coming to the end of school, but yeah, and then I kind of felt, when it got to the end of it and the bad thing happened, the book ended. I would have liked to have known a bit more what happened after that, because it was all leading up to a big event and then it ended. And but
so nobody got bored with it.
I didn't really get bored with it. I read it relatively quickly. It's just,
no, not you, but as a writer, you got bored with it.
I'm not sure.
Sometimes you get that feeling.
I can't speak for her, but I'm not even sure it's not one of her first ones, but. Anyway, I didn't dislike it, but it was kind of a bit of a weird structure. And
but could you sympathise with the characters at all? Because I find that very important. If they were all characters that you weren't really...
Again, you're more like you're an observer of what was... It was quite engagingly written and everything. It certainly wasn't...
It flowed.
Yeah. The next book, this will be quite a quick one. It's more of a sort of curio, really. It's called Notes from an Island. Now, this is a non-fiction. It's by Tove Jansson, and I can't pronounce the second name, so we'll just stick with Tove Jansson. Tove Jansson is the person who created the Moomins, but she and her partner owned a little island. Is it Norway? But Sweden? I should have checked. But anyway, let's just say she owned a little island, and it was a diary of, like, trying to, I think...
Adapt.
Yeah, I think even though maybe she only stayed there in the summer months, it was still very, very, very basic. And we're talking about possibly the 60s anyway, so...
That could be the Swedish, because, I mean, if you consider those places, it's dark in the winter.
She's Finnish.
No, right,
well, there. Swedish-speaking Finnish author.
Oh, yes, there's lots of little islands in...
Yeah, well, I mean, Abba.
Waterways.
Abba had a... It had a studio on one it's the trouble talking about books that you've read a year ago. When you've read 39, they seem a lot longer ago than. But anyway, yes, it wasn't a long book. There were some drawings and some, maybe some photos. Toby's very keen on the Moomins, and so I've kind of read one or two, and I was interested to read a bit more about her. I think I've got an autobiography to read at some point.
It's always an interesting pursuit. You find something a bit vague, which you pick up and, oh, I'll have a look at that. And then that can lead reading several...
That happens a lot with the books I buy digitally. For instance, the next book is an autobiography of Pam St Clement, who was on EastEnders. And I haven't watched EastEnders for over 30 years. I feel like she was mentioned in another autobiography I read. I can't remember whose. Maybe someone like Celia Imrie. Maybe she was in a play with her and there was an anecdote and I thought, oh, I didn't... You know, I think of Pam St Clement as being on EastEnders, but you forget, yeah, these actresses and actors have got lots of...
Mm.
You know, when I first experienced Judi Dench, I just thought she was some lady who was in a sitcom, because in the 80s she was some lady in a sitcom. But I thought that's... Not to sound demeaning, but... She's just an actress in a sitcom. And, you know, there are loads of sitcoms. And I don't think everybody who was in a sitcom in the 80s had the career that she'd already had by that point.
No,
but when I'm 10, you don't know that. She's just a lady in a sitcom, and so is that lady in a sitcom, and that's lady in a sitcom.
Shakespearean actress.
Yeah, and she'd have been around for years. Pam St Clement's autobiography was interesting. She had quite an interesting childhood as well. So sometimes the childhoods can be a bit boring with some people, or they can write too much about them, and sometimes they're really interesting. And But I found hers quite interesting because of the people who sort of don't think her father was particularly emotionally available, and she tended to spend time with relatives who was, and I have a feeling that her mother wasn't on the scene, or her father had run off with other people. Anyway, I don't want to get involved and get sued, but I know he wasn't a happy childhood, and except for when she was living with, she lived on a farm with an aunt and another relative. And
I think as you get older, you'll find it more interesting reading about the childhoods of some of these people, because you can relate to the times. I mean, I don't know her age, but when you say about on a farm, I wonder if she was an evacuee, if she's that old or not.
I think she's as young as you, something quite youthful.
But you see what I mean. I get more interested now in things that happened in the 50s and 60s, because it's a way of suddenly recalling, oh yes, that's how things happened.
She's 2 years older than you. So right. But about the war was going on at the time.
The war was ongoing. I mean, she could, if they lived in the bomb areas which were being bombed in London or Coventry or any of the bigger cities, Southampton, Portsmouth, where there were ports, they could have been worried about. But I was just putting a possibility.
I mean, not everybody likes writing them these days. There are definitely a few actors I like to hear more about who there isn't an autobiography of them. And although I'll accept a biography if it's written by, or it's got a good reputation, it looks like it's got a good cover and it doesn't look like it's sort of, it's not.
Choose a book by its cover.
Well, we all do, don't we? If it looks like it's been put together on Photoshop, then although I should speak because my books were good, but they were home. But you know, some books just don't look like. We used to get books in the library where I'd think, God, this is a professionally published book. It looks like it's been knocked up by a 10-year-old on a laptop. The next book I read was interesting because it was book that had originally been written for young adults, but weirdly was turned into a film that wasn't made for young adults. I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is a film I like, but the book, it's by Lewis Duncan. She wrote a lot of sort of psychological horror for young adults, but the film of I Know What You Did Last Summer bore very little resemblance to the book of it. But in a way, that was good because I didn't know who'd done it. The only weird thing about that, it was one of those authors where because it was written about 1973, they decided, oh, we want to appeal to, because the film is from the 90s, but they wanted to make it a bit more now. I guess they thought a child wouldn't, or anyone, I mean, I don't know who is reading this book, because I enjoyed reading it and I'm not a child. The subject matter wasn't necessarily for a young child, it was for teenagers, but I would have said older teenagers, but they tried to put things like mobile phones in there. And yet, I think I told you at the time, there were still lines about, I won't have any girlfriend of mine working, which even in 1973 would have been old-fashioned. So they tried to update it by having characters have mobile phones or talking about the internet.
I don't think that works.
No, it doesn't. It didn't work. No,
I don't like the idea of Swallows and Amazons or Enid Blyton books. Just leave them in the period they were meant. They're trying to get a new audience, but I suppose people that are around now wouldn't think of how vastly different the mobile phone and taking instant photographs of everything and anything.
What the things you, if you
was possible, and how it affected you, the change of.
Also, it could really if you start changing too much, it could really destroy the structure of the story, because you'd be often. I think they'd have to, the person had a mobile phone, but then they'd have, sometimes that they do that and they kind of go, oh, my mobile phone's not working, because they wanted to, you know, which is probably what they had to do in this book, because there was actually no other reference. You have to have rewritten the whole book to fit the internet in. There was no reason to mention the internet, but it was just, they left the stupid lines about, that would have been, about, oh, not having a girlfriend of mine working, which was old-fashioned for the 70s, let alone trying to say it's that now and saying that.
I personally, I don't know whether this will continue, not with me, but with the next generation, like to read books in like Somerset Maugham or Daphne du Maurier. And people used to say things like, oh, golly gosh, and I can't think of anything else, but you get the gist of it. And it fits in with the syntax of the way they spoke.
Poverty's always saying, golly gosh, oh, golly gosh, what's going on here? The next book I read was, again, I can't remember how I found it. Maybe I quite like that level. I quite enjoyed the part, although I think sticking a young adult banner on something means that an adult might not think about reading it. And I think that's a shame. In a way, it's sort of, just say it's a book. Anyone can read it. It's not...
Most libraries have a separate... Well, when I was working in the library many, many decades ago, there was a teenage section, which presumably was a way of helping the choice. The adults would have had to have gone into the children's library, might not have realised. I suppose you could have doubled up, actually, and had the same books.
But this next one, Wilder Girls, was about a school, but it was in a sort of post-apocalyptic, but it was something had happened and all the people on this island and at the school had sort of become mutated versions of themselves. I'm not even sure we knew what had happened beyond the island, but somebody kept bringing them food. They weren't allowed to leave the island and the whole sort of system sort of breaking down at the school as people got ill, because they sort of mutate to a certain extent, and then maybe something else you'd have a seizure, and then they die, or they get so they'd go mad, and they'd escape into the woods.
You haven't really thrilled me with any of these.
I wasn't trying to say you should read them. I'm just telling you what I've read. But I say that's almost what that. I accept that the characters were older teenagers. The actual. It wasn't perhaps as gory as a Stephen King, but it.
No.
But it was kind of about the right level, really.
They were taking it on the age of the people they were writing on, not necessarily the way they were.
There was no reason. I enjoyed. It was quite interesting, but I almost sort of again. I kind of almost when it finished, I wanted to know what is there another book coming along? Sort of thing.
It's interesting. The right word one should use if you're reading fiction. I would have said a book can be interesting if you're reading non-fiction, but it's the way. I read a William Boyd recently because I knew he was a prize winner and I'd never read any of his. And although it dragged on a bit because it was nearly 400 pages, but don't get me started on how books are too long quite often. But it was just, you just look forward to picking it up because it was an easy read. It wasn't trying to be clever. But it flowed, and you could hear the people talking to each other in the way that it was written down in the book, if you see what I mean, which is quite difficult to do, I think, to make it sound natural when you're reading it.
Another LGBT themed book I read at the start of 2023 was Dancer from the Dance by Andrew Holloran,
which was written in 1978, pre the AIDS crisis.
I enjoyed it. I think it's supposed to be a bit of a classic, but I've not heard about it before. But it was sort of anecdotes about a character who everybody knew on the scene, all the people that were on the scene, but this sort of central character, and how they sort of went through different stages of life, and would vanish into the scene and suddenly pop up somewhere else, maybe hanging out with a different crowd. It was a really good book. Not a story with a sort of a substantial plot as such. More picture of a time and a character and, you know, how they changed from when they first arrived on the scene and how the times changed them. Very easy to read, though, very engaging. I enjoyed it. I think I'm right in saying that the author did write other books, but he's not terribly prolific. Although I think there might have been, at the time when I bought this, I had a feeling there was a new book by him due out after quite a long break. I must look back and see whether that came out. Then I read a book called The Hole in the Door by Fox Emerson. That was another book that was sort of about the Australian LGBT scene. I think that was sort of from the late 60s into the 70s. It was mainly about one sort of boy's first encounters with the gay scene and how it was quite difficult to meet people, not necessarily even being of the age to be able to go into bars and sort of flirtations with friends and finding out who may have similar interests to you amongst your current friend set. Again, another of those books that's sort of really easy to read and you want to read more. Another of the books I read on my LGBT-themed search for things to read was a book called Two Roads Converged by Justin Durand. I'm not sure if it would be fair to say that this was possibly even self-published. I may be wrong. And not that there's anything wrong with that, as I did the same for many years. I really enjoyed this book. It was really kind of ambitious. It was almost like an LGBT thriller. Two young guys who found out that the people who were their parents weren't necessarily their parents, and that the person who was their parent was a bit of a crook, and how they sort of met. It was actually quite a complex plot, which I'm not sure I've got time to explain here, but one of the guys had been brought up as the son of the crook, and the other one turned out to be his actual son, and then he lost interest in the other son. It was all to do with inheritances, and involved the two boys meeting and sort of becoming close because of the crooked father. But it did turn into a complete James Bond film where they were running around Europe and being pursued by his people who wanted them back, or maybe wanted them dead. It was a real travelogue in a way, as well as a story. Yeah, a real adventure. And yeah, I enjoyed it. You have to consider that I'm also reading a lot of these books and they're overlapping. I'm reading, say, six books at once and I'm skimming between one and another. At this point, I tried to have an LGBT book amongst those six that I was rotating. And a couple of the LGBT books, or the authors I chose, the books were quite short. They were novellas, really. So both these next two were about characters meeting one another and starting to share their lives together. And the characters were the key, really. There wasn't a lot of plot beyond they meet and that they fall in love and eventually live together and live happily ever after. There wasn't a lot of, because they were novellas, there wasn't a lot of adversity as far as sort of they didn't keep breaking up, or there wasn't a baddie who was trying to steal anybody away. More just a engaging story. The two I read almost back to back were Daniel Elijah Sandifer's Heartbreak Ranch and Dick Parker's Curious. And I bought further books by both writers, so I did enjoy them, but they were a little naughty, so maybe not to everybody's taste. Still, I enjoyed them. Not long after reading Curious, I also read a couple more Dick Parker books, Life with Brad Rabbit and My Best Friend Sam. They were very similar, really, again, about couples meeting in a different circumstance. But they're, again, very engaging novellas, so quite a quick read, and also a little naughty. Well, the next book I read was a non-fiction book. It was Past Imperfect, The Autobiography by Joan Collins, which I enjoyed. And I kind of read this because you remember Nick had bought me some diaries of hers. And I don't tend to read physical books often because of my rheumatism, because of just holding the books and turning the page. It's just easier to read digitally. But I enjoyed those diaries. But they were sort of 90s, noughties. And I thought, well, I'd like to read a proper autobiography. The trouble is, she's had more than one go at it. This was the original autobiography, which only went up to before she was in Dynasty. But there's another one where she takes it further, but rather than continue, you'd think it would have continued from, but obviously her publisher, maybe it was a different publisher, said, can we have it all again, please? But I think she was, but obviously she's got more years, she was having to skip anecdotes, whereas I think that's what I believe the difference between the two is. This was better, really, because it was a bit more detail and about her childhood and how she sort of felt forced into her first marriage, and that he was an actor who she idolized, who turned out to be violent, and I think there's probably a little bit more juicy stories in this one than in the other autobiography, where I think she's had to skirt over things. So I'm glad I read this one because I really enjoyed it. You want a bit of gossip.
It's okay with film stars or actors, as long as it's not just a long list of things that they've been in and acted in. And you actually want some anecdotes, a little bit of gossip about other people.
Well, she sort of... There was anecdotes in the diaries, but more about how... You got the feeling how boring these socialist parties end up when you've been doing them for 50 years, and you're seeing the same old faces, and you're kind of there partly because you don't want to disappoint a friend, or whereas hearing it from the beginning, you sort of get the more the wow, I met so and so, who would have been senior to the or.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're the same age as them, and it's having dinner with Frank Sinatra again, still telling the same old stories. In the 90s when he was, it's different when you were
never learnt very much about his more nefarious activities, for example.
Yeah. I read there's a few autobiographies around here. I read the autobiography of Adam Ant called Stand and Deliver. I don't expect you to have had a big record collection of Adam Ant, but he was certainly very popular when I was about...
Yes, I remember Adam
seven,
Ant.
Seven, eight, yes. Nine. He was a bit of a punk to start with, but then he got quite mainstream, and he had the sort of... Well, he took that highwayman sort of image, and he also had sort of face paint. My friend...
Stand and Deliver.
Yeah, my friend Elaine always told stories of how she was mad about a man when, and I guess she'd have been more like 12 or something when, or maybe a little bit older, and which I think I'm sure she said about how she used to go out dressed like Adamant. But thankfully, you never had to put up with me being that keen on a group so much that I dressed like them. So.
I don't even remember you having posters of anybody in your room.
I did have a few Britpop ones, but only because they came free with the Enemy or Melody Maker. Yeah. I remember having Blur. I used to have Doctor Who posters, but not.
Blur, yeah.
That was quite good because he was very successful, but then he had a lot of mental health issues, and I think he was a bit of a perfectionist and. So he sort of burned very brightly and then sort of struggled on and off. And also people sort of, they get very keen on you. And then, because he also went to America and always had to start again. And it's just, but it was an interesting book. Around this time, Paul O'Grady had died. And I thought I'd try and read one of his books. But I didn't start at the start because I don't know. I just kind of thought, well, he's bound to have interesting stories, but I don't know if I want to start again. I didn't know whether his childhood. I didn't know how his writing would be, so I thought I'd start for one where he sort of was. I kind of like the idea of. I wonder what it was like when he wasn't famous, but he was trying to maybe first getting on the stage, and we're bound to have met all sorts of characters working the sort of working men's clubs and all those sorts of things, and the. So I started with one called The Devil Rides On, and it was the second one of four he'd done about himself. And I really enjoyed that, and then immediately bought the third, the fourth, and the first. He's also written books about his pets, because he's such a big... lover of animals. So pretty quickly I read the next one, Still Standing, The Savage Years, which was when he was doing Lily Savage and beginning to get successful on TV. And let me see. I did read... And the third one, which I read a little bit later, was called Open the Cage, Murphy. I think Murphy was a friend of his. I can't even remember quite what the reference is. So I ended up... I'm actually reading the very first one at this very moment, so I can't talk about that. But they're all really very readable and very interesting. I then went on to another autobiography, and I've read one of her books before, Phyllida Law. She's the actress who's Emma Thompson's mum. And it was a book that had two of her, had two books in one. Notes to My Mother-in-Law and How Many Camels Are There in Holland. And it was an omnibus edition. And Notes to My Mother-in-Law was literally about sort of... She was in a situation where her husband died young. Her husband, Eric Thompson, was the guy who does Dougal's voice and do all the voices in Magic Roundabout, among other things. So he had died, and then she sort of found herself looking after his mum in her later years. So it literally was all about... this would have been probably in the 80s. Other books I've read of hers have been about anecdotes about working at the theatre and all that sort of thing. And that first one was about her mother-in-law. I can't remember so much about how many camels there are in Holland. I guess that was more anecdotes, but... Around this time, following along with my LGBT theme books, I read a horror novel, effectively. It was probably more horror than it was LGBT. The main character was gay, but that was only a small part of the book, really, because the fact that the guy was a werewolf was far more important, really. The book was called Bored Gay Werewolf by Tony Santarella. It was a fun book. It wasn't the most gory of horror books. Definitely, in a way, reminded me of American Werewolf in London. But it was more about a guy who'd been attacked and was living with being a werewolf, but who met somebody who kind of wanted to encourage him to mobilise almost and join a sort of group of, almost like a social network group of werewolves. And he was quite ambitious and wanted the main character to be ambitious. He wasn't quite right. It seemed like a good idea, maybe, to meet other werewolves, but actually, that there was a sinister side to it which proved that he was right to be suspicious or concerned. At this time, I also read another Dick Parker book called Cousin Calvin, which, again, did follow a very similar sort of format of two guys meeting and getting together with not a lot of plot, or certainly not a lot of adversity. I don't think any of the Dick Parker books have chapters. I think if I'm right, they are all novellas, and yeah, it does make them quite difficult to put down, which is why I've read so many, I think. I read another Dick Parker book called Living Off Campus not long after. So despite the fact that they do follow quite a similar format, I did find that I've read quite a lot of them this year. After that, I read a book called This Bird Has Flown by Susanna Hoffs, who is a singer from a band called The Bangles that I like. And this was her first novel. It was quite mainstream. It was kind of based on a bit of her own experiences. It was about a woman who'd had a one-hit wonder, although she had more than one hit wonder. But it was about a woman who had a one-hit wonder who, and when she had the one-hit wonder, she had the attention of a very famous singer who she suspected also kind of would have liked to have whisked her away and done naughty things with her. And she'd always kind of been a bit sort of a little bit bitter that that was her only success and that she was so associated to him, even though she had loads of other songs. And she was, her record company wanted to write another album, and she came to London and met this professor. It was very sort of Bridget Jonesy, very very mainstream. I think they're making a film out of it, and I can see why, because it just sort of cries out to be
made
into.
Sometimes feel that the book has been written because they think, oh, well, this would make a good. If I do it this way, somebody might be
interested. It may have even been the agreement was that it was going to be. She's been around that long and has had that much success. As a writer in different ways, that it's possible that it was the deal. And I can see, sort of knowing that, I can always imagine, oh yes, Oxford, you've got a nice setting, you've got, you know, I enjoyed it, but it was relatively light. After that, onto another autobiography, Rupert Everett, To the End of the World. I think that was the first book I'd read by him. Very engaging, very lots of anecdotes, lots of gossipy sort of stories, and just very readable. Actually, it may not have been the first one. I think I read a book of his which was about, he was trying to make a film about the last days of Oscar Wilde and how difficult it was to get the funding. And so I think I already knew his writing was good, and it was interesting hearing how even somebody who was pretty famous struggled to get budgeting for a film. And but this was, The End of the World was like about school days and early days. And I'm reading another book of his at the moment. Then after that, and I think you might have read this, I reread The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath,
yeah,
which I hadn't read since I was at school. And because we did Sylvia Plath at, I can't remember if it was GCSE or A-level, I think it was GCSE, and just really didn't click with a load of 16-year-olds. But I read The Bell Jar and found, comparatively, it quite readable and quite, the style wasn't all abstract like her poetry. It was
I found the first, should we say, the first half reasonable, but I didn't like the last section at all. It was too miserable for me.
It was miserable, but not as miserable as her poems. But then, well, her poems were very miserable.
Well, yes, but then I could never, a lot of poetry, and I usually read one or two a night of just any poetry book that I happened, because my reading selection depends on what people leave in the telephone box now. I don't go into libraries and select a book if something's been left over in the telephone box, which takes my eye. Then I grace it with my patronage.
Mm.
I just read Rupert Fine's Family History, The Explorer.
Ralph Rafe, isn't it?
Ranulph Fiennes. Which is very different about it. It's entirely about his family, and as his family dates back, they can date it back to the 850s, roughly, AD, right the way through, and they've been tied up with royalty all that time, and still are to a certain extent. I learnt a lot more about history than reading a history book.
Mm-hmm.
The once 1066 and William Conqueror and all that, he had family because a lot of French people came over here, were given parcels of land and houses, large estates. So he had relatives that were actually fighting each other because some of them lived over here and always had, and the others were part of the French family. Mm. And that went on for hundreds of years, and I didn't realise that we were fighting the French for so long, and also the Spanish, and also arguments with the Holland, or Netherlands as it is now. So I felt that I'd learnt a lot more about the history obliquely by picking that book up than reading a straight history.
My next book was written by a friend of mine. It's called Jello Meltdown, a movie Thondari by Richard Glenn Schmidt. It's a few years old. I haven't looked at the dates of some of these books. I must say, not all of the books I've read have been like new releases by anything. Obviously, the Belcher wasn't. Most of these books are sort of a few years old by the time I found them. I don't know if that really makes any difference, but Jello Meltdown was from about five or six years ago. It's a non-fiction book. Richard is a big horror fan, and he does a podcast about horror films, and he was doing like a movie weekend where you watch, I don't know, 10 movies in a weekend and then doing little reviews of all. And it started as something he did on a blog, and this is sort of bringing them all together into a book with a bit more material around it, and you also get to hear about his cats and the food that they're eating, and then the mother-in-law, and he's just released the second book, but he's had to watch some trash films, but that's part of the fun of it. The Shallows are all sort of like psychological thrillers. There are one or two sort of familiar tropes with Shallows. Sometimes it's one character is being made to think that they're going mad, for inheritance, or maybe there's a mass killer and people would be it's sort of like an earlier version of the slasher movies, more from the 60s and 70s. And Giallos are a series of novels that are published, what it used to be published, with a yellow cover, and that if you buy them from like the newsstand, and they'd be a psychological thriller, and they were very popular, mostly Italian or Spanish.
That was like the Gollancz Press always had very plain yellow covers, didn't they?
Mm.
Years ago. That was Gollancz. I wonder if he got it from that.
But anyway, the films are very much for the 60s and 70s, and maybe into the 80s, but I enjoyed that. Next up, we've got another book by Lois Duncan, who wrote I Know What You Did Last Summer, called Killing Mr. Griffin. Again, they tried to update bits and pieces. It was harder to feel sorry for the teenagers in this, because I Know What You Did Last Summer, the teenagers, maybe yes, they're guilty of drinking and then driving, but there's somebody cycling, like a teenager cycling on a hilly road with no lights, and they knock him down, but then they can't find the body, you know. So they're not malicious. Whereas in Killing Mr. Griffin, Mr. Griffin is their teacher, and he's very negative. To a lot of them. But his opinion would be that he's being negative to push them to do better, and they end up killing Mr. Griffin, as you can tell from the title. The friend group kind of splinters because different members of them didn't necessarily know that it was going to get that serious, and some of the actions that were done in there they wouldn't have agreed with. But it was slightly harder to sort of sympathise with the characters, because they'd done something really bad. Whereas, you know, the people in the car, not every single person was driving that car. There might have been passengers in the car, but anyway, I still enjoyed it. Still keeping to my LGBT theme, towards the end of the year, I read a book called Arthur and Teddy Are Coming Out by Ryan Love. I have a feeling somebody's told me this is being made into a film. It is an LGBT book, but most definitely, the chapters alternate between a guy who's perhaps in his early 20s, he's been to university, but he's working at a newspaper which his mother is involved in, so is it a bit of a nepotism job? He's not sure if it's what he wants to do. He meets people his age, he sort of dabbles his toe in dating, but it's all quite sort of, I'd say it's pretty PG. There's nothing sort of beyond sort of dates and maybe the odd peck on the cheek. But the main point of the story is the Arthur and Teddy characters. You've got the young guy, Teddy, then you've got Arthur, who's a granddad coming up to being 80, and he comes out. His wife's very supportive. I think she's known for a while. You begin to, you as the book progresses, you find out more about why Arthur never came out back in the 60s, or what happened to him, and why he ended up with a family with kids. His daughter, Teddy's mother, initially takes it all really badly, and so there's all the family dynamics, and the various friends, and it was a book I enjoyed. I could see how it could be turned into a film. It was, yeah, kind of quite mainstream. I'm trying to think of a polite way to say. Quite mainstream, quite safe. I could see how a plot like this would fit into something like Neighbours or something like that, that is very LGBT friendly. But then you consider that Neighbours has a PG rating, so they can only do sort of LGBT plots that are quite safe, and they can do interesting things, but they can't do too salacious things. And this book was sort of like that. I don't mean that in a bad way, I just mean that it's not going to offend anyone, but I don't think it would. Getting towards the end now, but it was around this time I discovered a friend of mine on Facebook, who's also an author, had recommended a book by an author called Lisa Jewell. I'm not sure if it's a friend of his, but she writes psychological thrillers, maybe along the same lines as Ruth Rendell. And the first one I read was called Watching You, and it was about a family and one of the sons had his bedroom in the top of the house, and he was always watching people with binoculars. And then there was another family on the street whose daughter had gone missing. And there were all these unconnected characters, and you realise that actually they were connected. So it was very, very Ruth Rendell. So I did read more Lisa Jewell, and I'm reading another one at the moment. I think that Rupert Everett one I told you about earlier, that must have been the Oscar Wilde one, because I see I've got another one here, Red Carpets and Other Banana Skins. So that will be the book about his childhood. The one I read earlier in the year, To the End of the World, that would have been the Oscar Wilde one I was talking about. So apologies there for confusion. But yes, I forgot I got through two last year. This is the one about his early childhood and the early days of his acting. He was old enough and coming up into sort of doing professional acting in the early 80s that he got to work with a few really famous people. And he was even like interviewed by Orson Welles to be in a film that Orson Welles never made because he died, but he still got to spend the time with Orson Welles, like endless meetings and things. That
was inconsiderate.
Sorry?
That was inconsiderate, wasn't it?
I read another autobiography after that, Wonderful Tonight by Patty Boyd, who was George Harrison's wife and also Eric Clapton's wife. And didn't necessarily paint a great picture of either George Harrison or Eric Clapton, but it was interesting to hear from the point of view of a wife of one of these really famous people who had her own career and had her own talents, which you don't necessarily hear about. And I wanted to know more, particularly as I'm a Beatles fan. I enjoyed that. Although it did mainly focus on the build-up to her meeting, because her sister also dated sort of 60s musicians, and she was a model, so of course she got to meet a lot of these famous people and then ended up marrying one of them. It perhaps was written in the noughties, so I don't know, perhaps she just wanted to focus on that part of the story. I read another Lisa Jewell after that. This one was called I Found You. It was about a man who turned up on the beach and was taken in by somebody who had a cottage by the beach, and then a lot of other things unravel. Then I read The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes, which was also a film. He won the Man Booker Prize. It was about, I think this was a case where maybe I enjoyed the book more than the film, because it was a film with Jim Broadbent, and I was interested in the idea of it. There were slight changes as well, which sometimes makes a difference between the two. I feel like they may have combined a character that was anyway. After that, I read another Lisa Jewell, Then She Was Gone. I read a James Herbert book, Moon, which it had taken me a while to read because there were no real chapters and it was all difficult to sort of, when am I going to stop reading this? Sometimes there'd be a little symbol. It was set in a school. In a way, it reminded me a bit of that Wilder Girls, although it was nothing, it was about a man who was sort of getting premonitions. Then I read an autobiography of Hugh Bonneville, the actor. The only reason I thought about reading that was, A, it was quite reduced, and also he's exactly 10 years older than me, so I quite enjoyed that. And then, I think this is possibly my last two or three, I read a horror book by Ramsey Campbell, Ancient Images, which was about a film that had gone missing, and there was a person who looked for missing films, but somebody or something didn't want that film to be refound. And I read a few of his books, and sometimes, you know how dreams are slightly off kilter? His books often feel like you're reading a dream, in the weirdest way. They don't feel quite in reality. But the only thing that really threw me to start with was that I was reading it on Amazon when I bought it. It was advertised as a new book, so I was thinking, oh, it's a book written, he's just written. It was only when the characters kept going to phone boxes, I thought, well, this is weird, no one goes to phone boxes. And I looked, and it was a reprint of a book that had gone out of print, and it was from 1989, and I was like, okay, I need to get my head around, I get it now. This isn't set in 2023 or anything. The very last book I'm going to tell you about is called Josephine and the Argonauts. It's written by my friend Paul Mars. It's a Doctor Who novelisation, and Paul is the person who posted about Lisa Jewell. It was basically a third Doctor story with Joe Grant. They'd fallen into a machine, and it was all sort of like Jason and the Argonauts, except Jason wasn't there, and Joe became the person who led the way and battled all the different... and it had the Master, and he knows his stuff about Doctor Who, and it felt like you were watching a Doctor Who story with John Pertwee and Katie Manning, and that was fun. I'm a bit, sometimes when it's historical, I get a bit sort of, I'm not sure, but I guess this was, I thought I'd give it a go. I wanted to see how he wrote for John Pertwee. And the last book I finished in 2023 was called That Summer of 74 by Howard Rayner. It was another LGBT book, very much along the lines of sort of perhaps Tales of the City. It's part of a duo of books. There's another one that I'll be reading in 2024, which I've begun, which is a sequel to it, set many years later. This book's set in California, sort of in Hollywood. One of the guys is an actor, or burgeoning actor, whose father is in the film business. The other character is an artist and owns a beach house, and the two meet, and there's quite a lot of plot to it. And in a way, it reminded me of the Tales of the City books. I guess it's not that much like them, really, because Tales of the City books have quite a few different plot strands and different characters, and this book was certainly focused on the two main guys and their relationship, and not necessarily a happy ending at the end, but I can't say too much. In fact, I probably said too much by saying that at all. It was a fun book. It's quite a long book. It feels, I think, as I read all my books digitally, so sometimes it does feel like... it's hard to really get in your head how big a book is. It felt like quite a long book. Chapters were quite long. And there was a lot of adversity, a lot of troubles and bumps along the way between the two characters. Really engaging book. And I am glad there was a sequel. As I said, I did read quite a lot of LGBT books throughout the year, and I'm glad I did. Some were definitely a bit more well-rounded novels, and some were a little bit more about the sex scenes. I enjoyed them all. I was in the mood for something a bit more spicy, and I'm glad I tried them. Something like That Summer of 74, perhaps I'd return to. Arthur and Teddy coming out, Maybe not, because it was a bit too safe and mainstream for me. Still a good book, but I can see how Arthur and Teddy coming out with a good film. It was like a family film. That's about all we've got time for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about some of the books that I read in 2023, and I hope you've enjoyed hearing from my mum again, and I enjoyed talking to her about some of the books and about some of the books she's been reading and about the telephone box again, and looking forward to the books that I've started already in 2024, and well, let's see how many I get through. If I hope to certainly read around the same amount of books. But, yeah, it's really good to be able to read more than I was able to when I was working. And, yeah, so that's it for now. Join us again soon, and I'll say goodbye for now. And if you're not listening to a podcast, then do be sure to read a good book. You should always have a book on the go. It doesn't have to be classic or a hard read. It can just be... a book for fun, which all the books I read in 2023 were exactly that. Just good fun. Nothing that was too taxing or hard work. And that's why I read so many. I've got the sort of brain that if I'm struggling with a book, I just slow right down. So, yeah. Right, yes. Enough waffle from me. Bye-bye. Bye for now. Anything you can recommend that you've been reading at the moment?
Did you get them from the phone box?
Yeah, oh yes, definitely the phone box now. I don't use the public library. I bet they hate us. Occasionally get hello Pusscat. Occasionally get books given me, of course. So or occasionally I bought one the other week, because I always admired David Tomlinson, the actor in Mary Poppins. He had a very difficult start in life. Well, not his childhood, but later on, as his wife committed suicide with their two children. And he had a very interesting life. So there was a new biography came out about him. So I bought that, but generally I don't buy books. I haven't started that one yet.
Well, you've got a ready flow of books coming through your house.
I'm a terrible one for crime.
Yes, I know. We have to cover it up all the time. It's
so I'm reading a Vera book by Anne Cleave, the detective one that Barbara Breton plays the part on the television. And also I'm trying Rebecca Taupe. She writes books about Cumbria, well, not about murders set in Cumbria, but I should read this one, but I shan't probably bother to read another, whereas Anne Cleave, I usually know that I'm going to enjoy the writing, partly because I can just imagine Barbara Blessing saying those exact words, and she portrays the part so well. I always read some poetry each evening, again, if any poetry books are left in the telephone box.
Looking at that, from what I hear, you're often not that impressed with some of it.
No. I had to put one back the other day, though, because I realised it was Robbie Burns, excuse the accent, and it did say in brackets, mainly in Scottish dialect, and I did think that was... I read about a wee timorous beastie, but I don't think I could face a whole book.
Mm.
Yes, I just read any collection, every collection, children ones, they bring back happy memories, and quite a lot that I don't like, but I persevere.
Some of those ones reread
them, and so, then all the old favourites.
Some of the ones that are like in the 1,000 best poems or whatever, they often come up, you kind of think they seem a bit basic now. They seem a bit, they're kind of like, oh, okay, this person's got a big reputation off this poem and it's just okay, it's not.
I do find it difficult because quite a few sort of 17, 1800s, perhaps even more modern poems, so not so much, have allusions to classical mythology, which I know zilch about. So I did buy a book. No, that was the telephone box as well. It's a little treasure house,
mm-hmm.
With the stories about the Roman and Greek classic mythology stories, which I haven't read, to sort of start, perhaps give me more of an insight into what the poet was getting at. Yes.
Mm,
here ends the second.
Sometimes they can be a bit twee, or they can seem a bit twee. Some of those particularly romantic type ones.
I find it very Japanese, which are the five lines, three or five lines.
Haiku, I just don't even understand why that's a thing.
I find that difficult, because I can't think, well, why is that called poetry?
Well, I know.
I think I could string three lines of certain syllables together, like twig, branch, sky, plane, which makes sense, but it's not exactly poetry.
Yeah, well, some non-rhyming poetry ends up being more like prose, and I've met people who've kind of been snooty about rhyming poetry, and I've heard their stuff and thought, do you want me to be snooty about what you've just read, because I don't really get why that's a poem, but I don't, but maybe I shouldn't be so polite.
I think the use of rhyme with children is very good. When you make, not just with children, I was thinking of, W.H. Auden's poem about the night train, the pitter-patter of the... and you can hear it in your head, phonetically from the words, to the sound of the train clattering over the rails, and that starts basically in children's poetry.
Sometimes
he sat on the wall, etc.
Sometimes it gives it a rhythm and a sort of brings it to life. I mean, it's when rhyming poetry is done badly that's the problem. But then, when anything is done badly, when non-rhyming poetry is done badly, it's bad. So, I don't know. Maybe the people who write poetry and criticise rhyming poetry just can't write good rhyming poetry. That's why they don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy Pam Ayres.
Well, humorous poetry. She writes humorous poetry. I often did.
And always rhymes.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of often... makes the helps with I think I find
it easier. I was trying to think if Masefield's one about going down to the sea and the ships rhymes. It doesn't matter whether that rhymes or not, it's just such a lovely, can give you an image of something. I was reading a John Clare last night, who I like to a certain extent, but he had a lot of mental problems, and whether that affected him, but to me he hadn't finished the poem. It was all about spring and the lambs, and then about the lamb being tired, and it looked as if it was dead, and that was the end of the poem. But whether it's supposed to sort of be a life and death thing, because he spent a lot of his time in a mental asylum, I don't know, or whether he got bored with it, or perhaps they've lost the bit, the other bit that was on a scrap of paper.
Sometimes it's you never know unless the poet explains why it's, or the writer's explained.
I mean, John Betjeman always made me smile about his Miss Joan. No, I can't remember it, and it all rhymes with her name, Miss something Baker Joan, I think her name was, and getting to know her, and then he married Miss Baker Joan at the end. I mean, or what's the one about the lion? Who got eaten by the lion? What was his name? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
They sort of told him not to go near.
We never got to
the cage, you know.
we never got introduced to poetry that we might actually have enjoyed. We just got introduced to the most hardest poetry that you could possibly have imagined for teenagers to get into, and it was not a good introduction.
I don't think we were too... I did On Westminster Bridge by Wordsworth. That's right, isn't it? What is life if full of care? We have no time to stand and stare. That's Davies, I think. What else did we do? Oh, The Lady of Shalott, Paley, Wandering, Loitering. What other one did we do? Oh, about the cherries along the bough. I shall not see 50 years or more. Oh, no, that's right. He was 20 and he'd only got 50 more summers or springs when he would see the cherry blossom along the bough, which wasn't enough. Which is the ending of it, which always strikes you. And at the same as at the moment, the snowdrops and the crocuses are going to appear and the daffodils, and I think, oh, am I going to go and see them next year as well? I've got to enjoy them as much as I can this year.
Going back to...
You can miss that bit out.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. Goodbye,
goodbye, goodbye. Wow. Really? No kidding.
Thank you, darling. And you too. Bye-bye.
This show is part of the Pride 48 Network. Find more shows over at pride48.com.
Oh, what's going on now?
Oh, it's the Shy Life Podcast.
Let's go.
I have a voice.
I have a voice.
You have a voice.
You have a voice.
We have a voice.
We have a voice.
Unique voices in podcasting.
Univazpods.net.
That is so cringe, oh my God.
You're a man of culture as well.
Going back to the I think you read the thrillers, I think you read a lot more part of those or different types because you watch quite a lot of thrillers, whereas I discovered I like Ruth Rendell and I read a lot of hers, although I don't tend to necessarily like the detective ones. So, and some of the ones you read, like the Veras and all that sort of one, they're more traditional detective, or at least I presume they are, so I kind of avoid that. I prefer the psychological thrillers where maybe something bad happens to somebody who might just live in a house and they're not special or detectives or
I think anyway, whether it's because of that you started on reading those and you enjoyed reading those, so you continue in a similar fashion.
Well, I did read Agatha Christie as a young teenager, and But I always preferred Miss Marple to Hercule Poirot because her investigation was a lot more just popping around for tea and, well, you know, you knew the dead girl, didn't you? And people would speak to Miss Marple in a way they wouldn't Poirot because Miss Marple was just an innocent old lady, except
yes,
she wasn't.
He wasn't entirely a likeable character. I remember him mostly from watching David Suchet play the part, I suppose, not Kenneth Branagh. Yes, I usually, if I see, what's his name, somebody Mankell, the Swedish one, but again, I watch those on television. Kenneth Branagh was in those. One set of the series, anyway.
Well, he was in the English adaptation.
So. Yeah.
I can't think of the name of the detective, though.
I quite like... I don't really like historical ones very much, but at the moment I'm going through... Not supposedly set too strongly, so that you don't know whether the historical facts are facts that are appearing in the book. And that matters... whether it's strongly historical story or whether I'm going through Venice at the moment. Paul's visited Venice many times and I never have and never will. So, but I've got very interested in the... I've read a non-fiction book on Venice which set me interested in reading any novels which are set about the glass blowers and the similarly in Rome, the deciding who's going to be the next pope, which was read by Richard Harris, which it was very interesting because you felt that the information he was given you was the true. It's a very complicated process, the deciding who is going to actually become the pope. And now I know when the why and how the black smoke comes out and everything to show that it's been decided who's going to be Pope.
I was looking, for some reason, I was looking at the Wikipedia about popes yesterday, and there's only been four popes, I think, in my whole life. They've lasted quite well. Although there was one that only lasted for 30 days.
Mm. Was there one murdered?
Oh, there could well be. There's loads of them. I kept going backwards down the timeline, but in the end I decided that I hadn't got enough time in the day to...
There's a tremendous number of popes that I've just never heard their names. It's always appearing in things like University Challenge and pointless quiz shows and things about the names of popes, and never heard of the majority of them. They don't sort of make the history books. Not the same as kings and queens.
I remember what I learned was that Pope John Paul is named after a pope called John and a pope called Paul, and that's why he chose the name in respect.
Yes, they're not their real names, are they?
No.
I don't know whether...
And they're not Italian. They're not necessarily Italian either.
I don't know. Oh, no. German and Polish. I don't know. Oh, yeah, Brazilian, isn't it?
The current one is.
I don't know.
We know far too much about... For two atheists, we know far too much about popes.
Yeah, I don't know about the very early popes, whether they used a different name.
All sorts of names. Pious.
I mean, it's like nuns, isn't it? They take a different name, I think, when they become... Go into the nunnery, finally. I think they do. Because I think that must be horrible for the parents. They virtually lost a child, and the person they go to see is using the name Mary instead of the name they, or something.
They're religious. They probably just think it's
be after saints. Or
if
something.
They're religious, they probably just think it's a wonderful privilege that they're doing that or something. So, well, I hope you continue to get lots of interesting books in the. It's like the open. It's like the Open University, except a red phone box. Before we go, we have one last thing to say, and that is happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday dear mum, happy birthday to you. That wasn't very good singing.
Thank you very much.
I don't think so.
Listeners will appreciate that rendition.
She's almost as young as Bettina Dupre. Don't say that. All the listeners know who Bettina Dupre is.
That's all right then.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Goodbye for now.
Bye. Oh yes, but it's, sorry, I wasn't
really meant a person. She's a person to the listeners. Oh yeah, I've got to finish packing and stuff. That was beautifully done.
No. Paul's a great guy. Sometimes his poems confuse me.
I'm going to have some orange squash now. It's exciting.
Oh my God, there's nothing I like better is when another new episode of the Shy Life Podcast comes out.
A little bit naughty.
This is just the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
I
think that was a wonderful episode. Don't you stop me.
And make sure you read a good book.
Et voilà.
They were a little naughty.